The Pirate's Daughter. If her father had not been a justice of the peace, Ida might never have come to know the movie star. On a sunny morning in 1946, Ida Joseph stood outside her house in Port Antonio, leaning against her father's car. She was glad to be 13 because it meant the end of childhood and the beginning of womanly responsibilities, like picking out her own shoes. Her shoes that day were white and went well, she thought, with her pink and white dress. It was good to be outside after 3 days of rain. Looking around, she saw no sign of the bad weather. The ground was dry. The early sun revealed a patch of mountainside and warmed the car behind her. The street she lived on, Plumbago Road, was in the hilly part of the town, foothills of the Blue Mountains. From where she stood, she could see the sea. Any minute now, the ship would appear on the horizon. It was Saturday, and that meant she would drive down to the harbor with her father. Eli Joseph wasn't paid for his services as a justice of the peace. He earned a living operating a small taxi business. There were two taxis. A hired man drove the old gray Morris, and Mr. Joseph drove the black Chrysler that Ida now leaned against. Most Saturdays she would go with him, first to the courthouse to see if anyone needed him to notarize documents. After that, they made a few stops, maybe at the pharmacy or the cricket oval. Then they would drive to the harbor to pick up passengers. When the United Fruit Company ships arrived, all the life of Port Antonio drew to the harbor. They were huge, sleek ships, part of the company's great white fleet, and they impressed Ida. "Ida," she heard her mother calling from inside the house. Ida turned to face the car window, where, after a quick approval of her reflection, she took in the beige seats of the Chrysler. It was a big car with room for four passengers in the back. One of the things she liked best about driving in the taxi was the way the foreigners smelled. She wasn't sure what it was exactly. It wasn't on them, it was around them, and around their luggage, as if they'd brought some of the foreign air with them. It was unusual for a man like Eli Joseph, a white man and a Syrian, to drive a taxi. He was actually Lebanese, but in Jamaica they were all called Syrians. The Jews, Lebanese, Arabs, and actual Syrians who had come to Jamaica and made fortunes, all of them except Eli Joseph. A man of great ideas, he was often heard saying, "If I could just raise enough capital." He was considered a character not so much by the people of Port Antonio as by his family in Kingston, the wealthy Joseph Hanna clan, who owned the beer and soda business. To the black people of Port Antonio, the fact that he was a Joseph, a white man, and a justice of the peace guaranteed him a certain amount of respect. That he played dominoes and drank rum with them earned him their affection. "Ida, you don't hear me calling and calling?" Her mother, Esme, had come outside. For a moment, the mother and the daughter stood and eyed one another. Esme was a stout black woman whose overweight body moved with surprising grace. She had small Chinese eyes and a saintly expression that concealed how strict a parent she was. Her daughter looked as if she belonged to a different race, fair-skinned, with long black hair pulled back from her forehead, with a tortoiseshell bandeau. Her dark eyebrows drew attention to large, expressive eyes. It was hard to describe her as anything but beautiful. But Esme, who did not want her to grow up vain and stupid, made little of her daughter's good looks. "You out here idling while your father waiting for the newspaper?" Ida had forgotten that this was why she had come outside. She picked up the Daily Gleaner and walked up the paved path between the gate and the trellised veranda. Inside, the house smelled of buttered toast. It was a shining, clean house with furniture that was too large for the rooms. Her mother looked at her and frowned. "Why you let out your hair? Go plait it," she said, and went into the kitchen. Ida's father was drinking his coffee and listening to the radio. He took the newspaper from her, not seeming the least bit annoyed about having waited. He was a slender man with deeply tanned skin that sometimes led people to think he was Indian. Like his daughter, he had large, dark eyes, and he had long eyelashes that might have made him look effeminate if he hadn't had such a wide, square jaw. He was still wearing just his undershirt, and Ida could see the gold Virgin Mary pendant he always wore. Ida, look here, he said, opening the paper. Errol Flynn is in Jamaica. She looked over his shoulder and saw a picture of a man with wavy hair and a sword. She read, "World's handsomest man is here. Actor Errol Flynn arrives in Jamaica unexpectedly." "He's a big movie star," her father explained. Ida had seen only one movie, Tarzan the Ape Man, when someone had donated a projector to Father Reynolds' school down the road. Eli called to Esme back in the kitchen. "You hear that, Esme? Errol Flynn in Jamaica.